time for Licking on Lending.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you with us.
Welcome to Licking on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update providing up-to-the-minute information on interest rates, loan programs, and hot industry news, all related to the mortgage industry. Brought to you by Transformational Mortgage Solutions. To participate in today's program, our guest call-in line is 646-716-4972. Now, here's your host of Licking on Lending, David Licking.
Let's begin.
Welcome, everybody. Good to have you here. It is Monday, December 21st, Christmas week. Ho, ho, ho. Looking forward to Christmas this year. Finally got all the last of my shopping done on Saturday, so I'm feeling good. Did well. Feeling good about the shop. Got everyone that was nice, got their good stuff. Even a few people are naughty, got some stuff. So anyway, so good to have you joining here. It is Christmas week, and we're so thrilled that you're joining us. This podcast is created by mortgage professionals. It is for mortgage professionals, and we're so grateful to have you as our listener. Our commitment is to bring you timely information in an audio format that you can listen to anytime and anywhere. We are accomplishing that. People getting reports of listening to us all over during all kinds of different things, and a lot of drive time, a lot of workout time, a lot of work in the yard time, things like that. It's just a great way to passively grow as a professional, and we're thrilled that you've chosen our podcast to do that. Check out industrysyndicate.com, also mortgagemedia.com, two places where they aggregate other podcasts and you can listen to them. We have a special guest today that I'm really excited about. I mean, especially looking at the new year, I do a lot of consulting in the area of marketing. What's the new way? And we're all looking at the new year. So we have joining us today, Nick Hedges, who is CEO at Moment Feed. And you'll hear his background a little bit, but very celebrated background. His companies are famous. Velocify is one of the companies he's had. He's other companies. You can't wait to re-interview. It's going to be really, really good. It's live, too. So get ready to text me your questions as we're doing the podcast on the interview in the second half in the Hot Topic segment. And I'll get your questions over to Nick as we're interviewing him. It'll be a great interview. I want to say a special thank you to our sponsors, the Mortgage Bankers Association of America. Grateful for our partnership with them. And be sure to get signed up for the Mortgage Action Alliance app. Get that downloaded on your mobile device so that you can have your voice heard in Washington, D.C. And you do not need to be a member of the MBA, as I see each and every week, but you should be. So get out and get a membership going, number one. Number two, listen to the interview we did with Marina Wash about cost, average cost per loan, where things are at. Real insightful, and especially as we're going into the new year. Great podcast as you're planning the next year, and that was done on September 14th, 2020. Also, a special thank you goes to Finastra, their Fusion Mortgage Bot solution. Does a great job of tracking virtually every aspect of the mortgage banking process. It's a convenience, especially when you look at post-closing functions from point of sale all the way through the whole process. So really pleased with our partnership with them. We're going to be doing some New Year programs in conjunction with each other. We're really excited about that. Also, Lenders One and the Mortgage Collaborative, both of these co-ops are great places. We did an interview of Justin DeMolia back in June. We're going to be getting him back on soon. But we also did recently on December 7th an interview of Tom Gallucci at the Mortgage Collaborative. Again, the reason you want to become a part of a collaborative or a co-op, which both of these are, is because you get up close and personal. You get to meet vendors in a closer, more meaningful way. You also get to know your peers, and peer analysis and what others are doing is so important. Also, we want to say a special thank you to Indicom. It has many solutions for every stage of the mortgage life cycle, and we had them on, Linda Bomar and Nairan, who was there with us on August 31st, 2020. And then Incelerate does a great job of working with companies and engaging borrowers. An interview with Josh Fine back in August 17th. Also, Celebrity Home Loans does a great job of acquiring companies and growing through acquisitions. You need to pay attention to Celebrity. What Dave Robnett and that company is doing there is pretty exciting. Also, Innovian, which helps you maximize earnings and optimize your ability to really put together rate sheets for getting interest rates out in a timely manner. You got to go back and listen to the podcast we did with Ted Kramer on December 14th. That was an excellent interview. And also, for those of you that are not into secondary marketing or the capital markets, Ted does a great job of talking about the capital markets and where they've been, where they're going, and the complexities that go into it. Just a great informative podcast for anybody to listen to. A lot of great content there. Also, Knowledge Coop is a learning management system Ken Perry has. It's a great program. We love working with him. Also, Mobility RE, as well as Modex. These two companies do a great job at helping you create tools for originating loans and gives you intelligence as well as recruiting top LOs. You need to check out in our website, Lincoln On Lending, these two companies and what they specifically do. I'm really pleased and the difference it's made for a number of our clients who have brought both of these companies in to work and help them on the recruiting side. Also, virtual electronic mortgage marketing assistant is Velma Brent Embler. Also, VendorSurf and Vidyard. So grateful for all of our sponsors. A special thank you goes out to Alice, Alan, and Matt for their contributions each and every week. So let's get out to Rob Van Raphorst with this week's MBA Mortgage Minute.
Hi, I'm Rob Van Raphorst. Welcome to the Mortgage Minute and the latest news from the Mortgage Bankers Association. Last week, MBA and a coalition of trade associations sent a letter to Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin expressing concerns regarding the possible premature release of the GSEs from conservatorship. The letter emphasized that releasing the GSEs before they are reformed will undermine investor confidence, create volatility in the single-family and multifamily mortgage markets, and impede access to credit for consumers. Also last week, FHFA released a notice of proposed rulemaking to institute a new set of liquidity requirements for the GSEs. This proposal, which follows the recent finalization of the updated capital requirements for the GSEs, would include four measures of minimum liquidity, two based on expected cash flows and two based on long-term funding. The rule includes an effective date of September 2021. MBA will analyze the proposed rule and respond with recommendations as needed. That's it for now. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Rob. Appreciate you getting us over an update of what you guys are focused on there. Again, become a member of the MBA. They do so much for our industry, and it's a great networking. We miss the conferences. Can't wait for them to come back this next year and to seeing everybody. It's been a tough year, weird year, but the MBA continues, has done yeoman's work at making sure the right issues get addressed. And what Rob was just talking about with the GSEs coming out of conservatorship is probably one of the most important ones. This is going to have such a far-reaching impact. This is pretty far down the road, folks. We work closely with Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac and Jenny Mae for the two coming out as conservatorship, at least that's proposed, and we work closely with them. But there's a lot of new emails. Let's get over to Les Parker with this week's TM Spotlight, and this is Les's latest music parody, and see what he's got for us. Les?
TM Spotlight Soundbite is brought to you by Power Seller, making hedging easy. Last Christmas, bears ruled in our hearts, but the very next month, COVID took it away. This year, to save us from tears, we'll take shots to keep bears special. Last Christmas, mortgage rates were 3.75, and the Christmas before that, they approached 5%. The rise in rates during 2018 hurt mortgage production. Now with rates below 3%, lenders fear no pain. COVID-19 accelerated trends. Government response to COVID-19 gave us a flash depression. The Fed rescued rates from the shock. The trend changes fueled a mortgage boom. Rest assured, next Christmas, rates will give us something special. These views are my own. Want more? Go to tmspotlight.com.
Like the music, a good report. Yeah, what is special? What are the interest rates next year? So we're going to be focusing on that in the new year. After the first of the year, we're going to be talking about interviewing some of those that are doing a great job of prognosticating. I think it's going to be a phenomenal, another really, really good year. Maybe not quite as good as this year. This was going to go down in the record books as probably the high water mark for our volume and earnings and so many things about it. But certainly we got some great years ahead. I really do, really, really do believe. Anyway, Matt Graham is here with us with an update on the mortgage market. Matt?
This is Matt Graham with the MBS Live Market Update. Last week was busy at face value with a good amount of economic data, as well as key events in the form of the Fed announcement and the stimulus update. But for all of the potential market movers, things stayed pretty calm. Bonds started the week in stronger territory, not necessarily for any particular reason, and then spent the next 4 days gradually moving back toward weaker levels. Economic data didn't start for the week until Tuesday, and it began with import-export prices, not typically a big market mover. This was no exception. New York Fed manufacturing was stronger, indicated expansion, but not as strong as expected. Industrial production was a little bit better than expected, but down versus the previous month. All in all, manufacturing sector looks like it is holding pretty steady, not really blowing the lid off any expectations, but not alarmingly weak either. Wednesday was the big day with the Fed announcement in the afternoon. More on that in a moment. But the morning began with MBA applications. Both purchases and refis came in stronger than expected, continuing a really epic year for the mortgage origination side of the business. Retail sales, much weaker than expected, minus 1.1 versus a forecast of minus 0.3. That's on top of a negative revision to the previous month's data from positive 0.3 to negative 0.1. In simpler terms, retail sales were weaker than expected, and the previous month was revised weaker than expected. PMI manufacturing, this is from Market, by the way, with an I, not the ISM manufacturing, came in a little bit stronger, and PMI services came in a little bit weaker. Neither were in alarming territory, but neither are improving from last month. So that has us on the lookout for the more important or the bigger market mover, ISM manufacturing, non-manufacturing, to either hold steady or deteriorate slightly. Business inventories held steady. Crude oil inventories started to level off after last week's really epic glut that was so big some were concerned that it would have an inflationary or disinflationary impact, but no real correlation that I saw. Fed came in the afternoon, and the big consideration there was whether or not the Fed would extend its weighted average maturity of its bond buying portfolio. What that means is that traders were thinking, and the Fed had hinted that it could be a possibility, that they would increase the average lifespan of the bonds that they own. That means that if they're going to spend 10 bucks in the bond market today, if they are buying $5 worth of 2-year bonds and $5 worth of 10-year bonds, if they were going to maximize their weighted average maturity among those two choices, they would spend all $10 on the 10-year bonds, 10-year notes, and that would increase the weighted average maturity, and it would be better for longer term rates. It keeps Fed accommodation in the market for a longer period of time, all other things being equal, and generally would help things like mortgage rates be a little bit lower than they otherwise might be. By the time the meeting finally arrived, the market was really leaning toward the Fed probably not doing anything, and at least some of that had to do with prospects for fiscal stimulus being passed, even though it's not the stimulus plan that some may have wanted or hoped for. Just getting anything passed at this point is reassuring for the Fed from an accommodation standpoint. They really view the fiscal side as the more important side for the economy in the short term, and they view their own policy as more of a blunt instrument and not as efficient as fiscal. So even though fiscal wasn't completely dialed in, the fact that lawmakers on both sides of the aisle had been saying, hey, look, we're not going to leave Washington for Christmas until we get something done, was reassuring enough to probably push the Fed over the edge of not extending the weighted average maturities. So there was a little bit of weakness right when the Fed announcement came out, due to that fact, because some traders were still sort of holding out for that possibility. But when it didn't happen, yields spiked very briefly, and then they began to come down. The first reason they began to come down is that the statement itself was a little bit more bond friendly than the previous one. There were minor tweaks to what's known as the forward guidance component of the statement, where they say how they'll change their policy depending on certain eventualities in the future. In this case, they specifically laid out their MBS buying amount, which was nice to see, and they said that it's going to continue until there's substantial improvement to their dual mandate, which is employment and price stability. Then in the press conference, Powell was bond friendly yet again, and the most notable point was when he got a little bit more animated about inflation and said, hey, look, we got to be really honest about inflation here, people. It's not like it was in the 70s. We're going to be able to put a lot more money into the monetary system without running the risks of hyperinflation that we may have been conditioned to fear from back in the day. And bonds reacted to that immediately. Yields came back down. Of course, all of this is occurring in a very small range in the bigger picture. And indeed, the following morning saw bigger bond movement without the Fed being in play. A lot of that could be assumed to be early year-end, month-end, quarter-end trading, and it took yields lower at first, but then higher, and that was pretty much it for the week. Everything else was drifting in the same range that was set by Wednesday and Thursday. Heading into the new week, we had a little bit of a surprise market mover in the form of a buzz that had gathered momentum surrounding a new strain of COVID that's faster spreading, scary stuff, whatever. And stocks and bond yields logically fell on that, but the more markets understood this news, the more that those initial reactions sort of pushed back in the other direction. Probably the biggest reason there would be that everyone agrees that the vaccine is still going to be effective versus this new strain, if the new strain even continues to be a concern, and we don't necessarily know that it will at the moment. So a pretty logical reaction from the bond market. As far as this week goes, bonds are still holding in a sideways range, just trying to make it to the end of the year without any major drama or surprises. Should be a light volume week, should be a relatively low liquidity week. That can sometimes lead to surprising moves in either direction, but those moves tend not to be long lasting. And if anything, they could easily be reversed in the following week. We've seen that many times. But all other things being equal, unless 10-year yields are breaking outside a range of, say, 0.88 to 0.96, really nothing new is happening. That's the sideways range that's dominated for a month now. And until that changes, really nothing is changing. From an economic data standpoint, everything's compressed into Tuesday and Wednesday. And that makes Wednesday a really, really big day for economic data, but so many people are going to be tuning out so early that even if bond markets are moving, I really wouldn't put much stock in that movement. That's all for today. Just a reminder to listeners, mbslive.net has a benefit for Lickin' on Lending listeners. Use the code LOL when you get to the site to set up your free trial, and you'll get double the free time, no credit card requirement. Back to you, Dave. Have a great week.
Thanks, Matt. Really appreciate that. I'm looking also at existing home sales coming out on Tuesday. That's going to be a big one. We look at where the housing market's at, and then also we got the 5-year treasury note auction. See what that activity is. And then just Wednesday. Wow, look at that. I'm looking at the trading range. This is a really nice system, folks. Check it out. Go get the free trial and go and get the extra time. There's so much on the screen. I could go on and on, but appreciate it. Matt, appreciate the partnership. Have a Merry Christmas, friend. Let's get over to Alice Alvey, who is here with a legislative update. Again, Alice has been here since the very beginning of the podcast. We're so grateful for her contribution each and every week. One of the more sought after, listened to, downloaded segments, especially when you go back over a period of time.
Yeah, you heard Rob mention about the Federal Housing Finance Agency. There's a lot more talk about the liquidity requirements, especially independent mortgage bankers will have to be following. So to give everybody just a little bit of context, it was back in January when FHFA proposed the update to what the capital and liquidity requirements would be for IMBs. That was about January 31st. Then everybody had a chance to respond. MBA provided detailed comments. And then we had in June that FHFA announced it would not be implementing all the proposed changes yet, and they would re-propose at a later date some lessons learned from the pandemic, because a lot of this is about determining stress testing and the impact of COVID, of course. The thing that hit everybody hard last week was Fannie and Freddie both published memos. And I'm laughing at the way it's laid out, in particular in Fannie. It's not summarized at the top, right? It lists always the topics that are covered in a memo. It's not listed. And then it's like in the middle of a page break, split, a paragraph split between page one and page two. It's like, did you think we wouldn't notice this within the whole by placing it there? What is going on? But basically it says that lenders would not be able to use their MSRs for any unused portion of their credit lines in their assets. So this is a big change in the asset calculation. So any committed lines of credit would not be able to be put in the liquidity requirements. So when you look at the overall change of what's changing in the minimum financial eligibility requirements, this is one that MBA was trying to push back on to not have implemented. And so to have FHFA just put it in a memo, and by the way, the effective date that was put in the memo was March 31st, which is very different from the overall liquidity tests that are effective at the end of 2021. So I think as lenders, we're definitely getting together again and to make sure that we understand and can potentially push this back and change the date on this. There is an attachment that FHFA gives. If anybody isn't sure where to get it, the MBA has a good link to it. I'm happy to send it to you, that summarizes what the financial eligibility requirement changes are. That part's not unexpected, that they want IMBs to have higher liquidity. This piece kind of coming out in advance on its own without any additional consideration, that really starts to be the issue and is a pattern, unfortunately. So more on that, but that's what happened just last week, a change in liquidity requirements. As another side note, VA did propose a temporary measure for partial claims for COVID. So similar to what FHA has, it's an additional step in a waterfall process that will allow a lender to create a second lien that VA will purchase. It'll be a 1% note rate, 10-year term. It can be up to 15% of the current UPB of the loan, and that'll help borrowers basically finance their delinquent payments. And so it's a great thing. It's a proposed rule out there. VA is looking for comments. You have till January 8th to respond. So, Dave, those are my two big things for today. Juice's Christmas is coming up. You would think it would slow down, but still news out there, even though it's not new bills. It's the agencies acting up.
Yep. Great job. Appreciate it, Alice.
Absolutely.
And Merry Christmas to you and one of my favorite guys out there, her husband. He is just such a great guy.
He takes great care of me. Merry Christmas and happy holidays to all our listeners out there.
Yes, yes, yes. Now got Alan Pollock here with the tech update. Alan, good to hear your voice, friend. How you been?
Good. So here's a good laugh. I was looking at these quotes online and the saying, like the TV commercial, David, right? What would you do for a Klondike bar? Anyway, this one was a note. And it said, well, I heard what you did for a Klondike bar. Call me, please. So that was pretty funny. I appreciate you laughing to make me look like I was doing good there.
Oh, you did all right.
So a couple things going on in the news. Rocket Companies, a company called Nexus Technologies launched their Clear HOI platform for mortgage lenders. And what it does is basically cut the homeowner's insurance verification time to minutes. They say mere minutes. It allows lenders to automate that process. There's a couple tech platforms out there doing that. It's just another process in the efficiency gain going digital, especially with so many consumers and everyone being so digital because of the year of 2020 and what it's done to us. So hats off to Rocket Companies and Nexus. Another great piece of technology that everyone should be looking at. David Tavant, on December 2nd, they mentioned that they have a new partnership with a company called Softworks AI, and it's basically document automation services. Tavant is ingesting documents, as you would assume they are. It's called FinCapture, and they're doing indexing classification. A lot of people are now doing this. It is extremely important in the age of needing to create efficiencies in underwriting and manufacturing and extracting data. And we can't keep hiring more underwriters and more auditors. It's very difficult, very expensive. So hats off to Tavant on that. David, we've heard this one last week. I had somebody text me right away and say, holy cow, $280 million in cash. Walter Kluwer's agreed to acquire cloud-based digital lending software provider eOriginal for that much money. So that's a very interesting acquisition. And mortgage servicing company, they call it fintech company, Sagent, has announced a partnership with Busy Labs. That's a name I haven't heard before. Busy Labs, they're a provider of compliance risk mitigation technology powered by artificial intelligence and big data tools, as you'd expect I was going to say. Partnership automates compliance and operational costs, lowering those. But here's the kicker. And Sagent is a servicing company. Well, they do many things, but servicing is one area of their focus. So they're looking at using AI to power compliance and help servicers better manage their portfolio for onboarding and monitoring loans from regulators, investors, top servicers, default, all the things that are going on right now in servicing. They're creating all kinds of great technology there. So very interesting what Busy Labs and Sagent is doing. And David, before I get into fraud, which is a topic I want to talk about as we end the year here and people sort of let their guard down a little bit, is Caliber Home Loans. I love this. They have launched what they call their Processor Accelerated Career Education System, PACE, P-A-C-E. It doesn't have anything to do with technology, but we need to be doing this in technology and in our industry, more like what Caliber's doing. Basically, they allow a non-industry professional to get a career mortgage, and they let themselves learn everything about mortgage. It's 7 weeks of hands-on training, and then they hire those folks at the end of graduation.
What's it stand for?
PACE stands for Processor Accelerated Career Education.
Ah, interesting. Yeah. I like that.
Right before we get to the big topic I want to talk about, which is fraud real quick. What do you think, David, you're more likely to put into a children's stocking this Christmas? Because Statistica has a stat, and they do really good stats, and they take data from all different kinds of places. So what do you think America wants to put in their children's stockings this Christmas? I'll give you a guess. Of the top four, you tell me what you think is the number one. You have the choice between candy, chocolate gum, small toys, lip balm, or gift cards.
Gift cards. If it's a teenager, it's got to be gift cards.
Well, not according to Statistica. So gift cards was fourth, lip balm was third.
What?
Small toys was second, and candy, chocolate, and gum was number one. 74% for candy and gum compared to 45% for gift cards. And what's at the bottom of the list, only 29% was movies, music, and books. So the world of digital, right? With everything online, no one's getting books and movies. These DVDs in their stockings anymore.
I tell you, this is an indication of where our country's going.
David, so last week there was a lawsuit filed for a mortgage brokerage company. They claim that one of their former loan officers stole a database containing client names and information and brought it to his new job. I'm not mentioning names and companies. The LO basically downloaded it into Dropbox. That's one way fraud happens, but that's not where the problem is. That is a problem, but our wonderful mortgage lenders and financial institutions to take care of. But we're talking here about letting our guard down. Sniffers, people that hack into your Gmail account, to your other account, and they look for mortgage and accounts and all that. And they monitor it for months and months. And then finally, when they see that there's something going on, they intercept and they impersonate the bank, the lender, the attorney, the legal entities, and they steal your money. Well, that just happened. It happens every day, by the way. Aaron and Lindsay Fisher, they found the dream home in Northern California. It was $1.5 million. They got an inheritance and they went to wire $921,000.
Now,
Aaron's a psychology professor. He's one of the sharp crayons in the box. But what happened is exactly like I said, the money went out and it went offshore to China. Luckily, the FBI got involved. This never or rarely happens. The money was recovered. So they got the money back.
Oh, yeah. There's a happy ending.
But
to this story.
This year alone, $220 million in schemes like this have occurred. There's companies in our industry, Funding Shield, Dietrix, and many others. Part of the transactions and the communication have to be in your portal or leveraging secure messages. So it's that time of the year where January is coming. We're short on staff. Don't let your guard down. Try to communicate to your borrowers exactly what it is that they need to be wary of, even if you don't have the technology in place. But with all the technology we've been implementing and investing our money in, make sure next year you prioritize your portal, your consumer engagement portal, to have the things that you need for the closing documents, for the wire instructions. Make sure that you're using phone call conversations with your loan officer. Make sure those things are occurring correctly and you'll help prevent that wire fraud. It's the worst thing when a homeowner saves their entire life or an inheritance and it goes away because of one simple mistake in a Gmail account. So wire fraud is a big deal. There's technology ways to solve it. Outside of that, listen, we will have another podcast next week, David, but Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, and looking forward to next week. And then we'll kick off an awesome 2021.
Yeah, we will. At the report, we started telling that story, I started cringing again because it's just too much of that going on. And especially when it's an inheritance, money coming from family, it's never good. But anyway, Alan, thank you so much for the update. I could go on and on in commentary, but we want to get on to the hot topic. Yes. So anyway, that wraps up our weekly update of the mortgage. For those of you listening on a downloaded basis, just continue on to the next podcast because we separate these out on a downloaded basis. That way you can kind of digest them in power chunks somewhere right around there. But right now we're about ready to get into our hot topic segment. For those of you listening live, just stay right here. We're going to get right into it. Folks, welcome to the hot topic segment of the Lickin' and Lendin' podcast. Today we have Nick Hedges joining us. He is CEO of MomentFeed, really interesting new company that he started. And we'll be discussing changes that's going on in the mortgage industry, specifically when you look at digital marketing. He's going to educate us on how marketing to consumers has changed with a special focus on the drivers of what has that change been and what does this mean for the new year? What can we be looking forward to? And we have got a real expert on this topic, and I'm so excited to have Nick Hedges joining us on the podcast. Nick, good to have you here.
Thank you. Very nice to be with you and your kind words.
Well, your success is something that so many people admire, and I want our audience just to get to know you a little bit before we get into some really good stuff, because if they don't know you, they should know you, and if they think they know you, there's some things in your background I think is just fascinating. We do have, Nick, a lot of people that are new to the industry or wanting to come into the mortgage industry that listen to our podcast, get a lot of emails from college kids and those considering a career in either mortgage technology or in the mortgage industry. And so I want to gain some insights to your background. As some of our listeners may know, probably a lot of them know, that you grew Velocify from a young startup to a top sales acceleration platform for the financial services industry. And a good number of our listeners are very familiar with Velocify. But if you talk a little bit about that company, and not only did you start something, but you successfully sold it and you survived in that sale. That's pretty amazing. Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. So I joined Velocify when it was a really small company and it wasn't called Velocify. It was called Lead 360. So I was working at a company called Bain & Company. I had just graduated from Harvard Business School a couple of years before that. I had entrepreneurialism sort of coursing through my veins, and working at Bain & Company was fantastic, but wasn't scratching that itch. So one of my classmates from Harvard Business School, who was a venture capitalist, introduced me to Lead 360 that he had just invested in. He said, look, this company is kind of tiny. They do something associated with lead gen, but it's not lead gen, it's software. And we don't really know. The mortgage industry is going through hard times because this was back at the end of 2007. And we need you to come in and see if you can help figure out how to grow it. And so took a look at the company. I saw that it had a lot of potential. potential, because what they were doing was taking internet leads and helping mortgage companies primarily organize them and email them and call them and that kind of thing. And I could see how it would be difficult without that kind of system, with the kind of volume of leads that these companies were buying, to do it. So jumped into the company. I started there in a more of a kind of strategy and business development role, ended up running sales within a few months of being there, and then marketing, and became the chief revenue officer. And after I'd been there for about a year and a half, they asked me to be the CEO, which is what I did for the following 7 years.
I mean, they recognized that. I think founders for Lead360, they found a good venture capitalist, but you sold the company to Ellie Mae, and you then moved over to the corporate side. And I want to talk a little bit about your perspective, about your entrepreneurial itch, that passion that you have, and then finding yourself in big Ellie Mae as the consumer strategy functioner.
Yeah, so it was a fantastic experience. We decided that we really wanted to kind of double down on some of the things that we were doing. And so beginning of 2017, I met with Jonathan Corr, the CEO at the time. And I said, look, here's all these things I'm building. And I really want to be more deeply integrated into the Ellie Mae platform than we already are. Like, our customers just get huge value from us working together. And I just want to build out something that does a better job of enabling consumers to enjoy a digital mortgage, and it means we're going to have to be passing information back and forth. And he said, that's sort of dead on with my strategy too. How do you think about doing it as one company? And I was like, oh, you're asking whether I would join forces with you? And he said, yeah, I mean, I think it makes a ton of sense. So anyway, 6 months passed, and at the end of it, we were part of Ellie Mae, which was super exciting, incredible company, obviously had a lot more scale than we did. We were about a 250-person company. I think they were probably a more of a 2,500-person company at the time. Yeah. Obviously, they're bigger now. And so a lot of my job, frankly, was helping with integrating the two businesses. But one of the other aspects of it, as you said, was leading their consumer engagement strategy, which was, how do we achieve the true digital mortgage? Because a true digital mortgage, as Ellie Mae saw it, wasn't just about being able to pass information from one screen to another by a consumer, but it was also enveloping that process with phone calls and the ability to email someone and text them when things didn't go right. And so that was super interesting, very exciting. However, entrepreneurs are born to be so, and being a big company, even though it was doing some interesting things, wasn't kind of my life's passion. And so after we've been at it for a year and a half, made some good progress, I talked to Joe Tyrell, who I reported to directly, and said, I'm having a great time, but I want to go and do something new, like, as in start something again or get into something very early, because that's where I'm really excited enough. I think Joe was a little disappointed to lose me, but he's a really great guy and understood it.
Yeah.
I span off and spent the following 6 months sort of wandering through the wilderness trying to figure out what my next big idea would be.
I can't wait to get into that here in just a minute. I want to talk about Joe Tyrell. We had him on the podcast recently. He did an interview with him, some of the things that they're doing. Now Joe's got a huge task in front of him, very capable of doing it. The task is as big as he is tall. He's a tall, tall guy. But I want to get into talking about what you're doing, especially with Moment Feed. I love that name, and I'm going to get into that just a little bit later, and several people are saying, to talk about it. So we want to talk about it, but I want to educate our listeners a little bit on, I mean, we could go into your background. We start kind of giving a little bit of a historical overview on lead generation and digital marketing. Did Harvard education prepare you?
Yeah, I mean, I think Harvard Business School, it's a pretty interesting place. You learn everything from conversation. They call it the Socratic method. So there's less about reading books and more about reading short business examples, cases they call them. And then a class of 80 to 20 to 30-year-olds who are your kind of classmates talk about that business and the dilemma they had and how they should go about fixing it. And you have a professor who's sort of prompting you and asking questions and so on. So what it does is it really kind of gets you always thinking about how to solve problems, which is essentially sort of what you need to do in order to be an entrepreneur and what you need to do to succeed as a business leader, is continuously make decisions when you have limited information. You only have partial information. So I think it certainly helped, but I wouldn't say I spent a lot of time working on kind of digital marketing strategy when I was at Harvard Business School. I
gave you the business cases. I love how Harvard Business Review always talk about these cases. They're legendary for that. I love that, what they're doing.
Yeah.
So I'm glad we had a chance to touch on that. But give us a little bit of an overview of lead generation, digital marketing. If you could just spend some few moments, just educate our listeners. Where has it been and what are we coming up to?
Yeah, so lead generation, one of the early parts of the internet. So if we go back even further, before the internet existed, branding was everything, right? So my first job out of college, I worked for Ogilvy & Mather, which is a global advertising agency. Yeah. I'm making big blockbuster TV ads. My clients were Ford Motor Company and Kodak. And so we spent more on TV advertising and making a TV ad than any blockbuster that's ever made or ever been made since. It was just all about those TV ads and getting consumers to consume the same brand story and buy the same things as one another, mass consumerism, essentially. The internet changed everything and enabled businesses to have one-on-one communication with individuals. People sometimes call it mass individualism. And so when the internet became the dominant source of information, it had this kind of really deep impact on how consumers consume. And they now, when it comes to lead generation, the first thing that a consumer will do when they are trying to make a decision, really about anything, they open a web browser, whether that be on their phone, whether that be on a computer, or sometimes whether it's a Siri or Alexa conversation, but they're entering the internet. And so what happened with lead generation was that it was the first part of the process. People opened their web browser, they got onto the internet, and they couldn't find what they wanted. So they were looking for a mortgage, and they were trying to find a mortgage, but they couldn't get the information that they needed. And so companies like LendingTree and Lower My Bills, who were right at the beginning, the kind of entrepreneurial boom in the internet. Yeah, so Lower My Bills and LendingTree and a number of other companies realized that there were all these consumers looking for information about mortgages. They wanted to get a mortgage. They'd started on the internet. They were willing to put their information into the internet. And so LendingTree and Lower My Bills set out kind of marketing net to collect all these consumers up. And then they funneled them back into mortgage companies so that the mortgage companies could then talk to them in the more traditional way, which was picking up the phone and speaking to them. So that's sort of how lead generation got born. And it's been around for, you know, probably 20 years at this point, became very prevalent in the last decade and obviously continues to grow and grow.
Any quick insights you have to say on how we're seeing it shift?
Yeah. So I think when it comes to the internet, depending on when you were sort of at the height of consumerism and how prevalent the internet was then, kind of guides how you use the internet today, right? So if you're a baby boomer, when you joined the workforce, the internet wasn't a thing. It wasn't a way that people consumed at all. And so someone in their 70s uses the internet, but it's not necessarily the first thing that they think of when they're trying to make a decision about what they buy. However, you think about Gen X, which I'm a member of, internet was starting to be a thing when we entered the workforce. Like, I was one of the first people who like really knew about the internet and my company. And so most Gen Xers will start their buying journey for anything with the internet, but then they'll quickly jump out from the internet because they're very comfortable with a non kind of digital world. You take millennials, they entered the workforce. I mean, they were born in the internet, many of them. And so for them, everything starts and ends with the internet. So that's really where a digital mortgage comes from. Like, millennials in particular expect not only to start their buying journey, but complete their buying journey.
The greatest changes in digital marketing is that. Right. And you're a great thought leader. I mean, you look at what you started. Started a lead company similar to Lower My Bills and some of the others. It was a small company. It grew. Then you rebranded the company as Velocify and got it sold. And then you obviously are seeing some opportunities. And I can only imagine Joe Tyrell did weep a little bit at the loss of you, because you're a good critical thinker. So talk a little bit about the digital world that we see ourselves now. Where is it going, especially as we look into the new year right around the corner, how we should be looking at it?
Yeah, so I think the interesting thing is, I mean, maybe not into the next year, but over the next few years, there's another generation coming through the workforce, right, which is Gen Z. And they're going to be buying homes fairly soon too. So that's going to have a big impact on the mortgage industry. So if we're thinking out maybe 5-10 years, how does a Gen Zer think about things? Well, they were literally like, the internet was flourishing by the time they were born. They don't know anything else. They've been on social media since the day they could read. And they expect a digital native experience for everything. And so what I mean by that is there really is no internet for them. Like, everything is the internet, which really means that they expect an experience that is digital woven into their real life. And so what will happen over the next 5 to 10 years is artificial intelligence will meld with the internet so that we can have a truly digital experience in the real world. I know it sounds a little bit futuristic, but you can imagine in the future, I have an assistant talking in my ear, which might be Siri or Alexa, but could be something else. I'm constantly having a conversation with them. So I might be sitting at my desk and I'd say, hey, I really think I should buy a new home. And someone will talk in my ear and say, oh, that's interesting. Well, you have had a pay rise recently. You probably do qualify to be able to get a mortgage. What kind of home do you want, et cetera, et cetera. And you're having this sort of natural conversation at the point that the AI is stretched to its maximum limit. It will probably say, okay, well, I can't really answer that question. Would you like to speak to a mortgage bank? Would you like to talk to a loan officer? And I say, yeah, sure. And then the loan officer will come on the phone, or I say, well, actually, I prefer to meet with someone. Directions will be sent to my Tesla car or whatever it may be. It will drive to the local loan officer and have a conversation with them, but it will be very kind of integrated. And so that's where things are going. And so it's a pretty interesting world because we tend to think about online as being one thing and offline being another, and the two are merging. And that's really kind of the idea for Moment Feed sort of came together, which is the buyer's journey begins online, regardless pretty much what generation. That's,
the process is really beginning online, but it's really continuing through the entire process. And so my daughter's a Gen Zer. We married her off a year ago, and they're very successful in their careers and doing very, very well. Already a financial planner, already looking to buy their first home. And the first question they ask, which really goes right down and validates what you're saying, is, Dad, we really don't want to talk to anybody. We just want to start learning everything we can. Is there a website you can send us to where we can just start learning and gaining knowledge? So I directed them to a particular company that does a really good job, and they're not selling one bit. Do these people want to be sold? It's just information. At least that's what I'm picking up talking to my own daughter.
Yeah, I think people want to do a lot of research themselves these days. Most buyers come into the process very, very educated, whether it's a mortgage or anything else. So even as a car dealer, I've talked to people in the automotive industry, and people turn up now to their dealership knowing more about the specifications of the vehicle than the person at the dealership. And so you have a very educated consumer that wants information when they can't get it, and they want it now, right? As a mortgage bank, you need to be able to cater to that. You need to cater to their education journey, but also when they want the information, they want it right now. And so you have to have a digital marketing strategy that enables you to interact with the consumer however they want to interact, whether it's in person, because in person still is important, or whether it's phone or whether it's text. But you have to be there at the moments in their journey where the information they're getting online is either confusing or a little bit less than what they need.
We're getting a lot of questions. One of our listeners just texted me a question. You mentioned earlier about a digital native experience. Could you expand just a little bit on that?
Yeah. So for me, what a digital native experience means is you no longer are thinking about the experience being digital. Like, digital is woven into your everyday life. So you're not necessarily going to a computer and turning it on and looking at the internet. It's happening with you and around you. So one example that's almost that is that everyone carries a phone today. And so as I'm walking out of my house, making sure I have the keys in my pocket, I'm pulling out my iPhone and I'm writing some kind of search term for whatever it is I want. Like, maybe I'm on the way to the office, but I'm hungry and I write coffee on Google. And it's sort of highly integrated into the way that I do things. And that experience is becoming more and more digitally native. So nowadays, like, my kids, I think they talk to Alexa in my house more than they talk to me. They will ask her questions about everything. She'll play their music. And that's how things are becoming.
Let's go, Alice, first. Any questions you have based on what you've heard so far?
Well, actually, Dave, this has been fascinating. And of course, I've been in Moment Feed as we've been talking. So you said you wanted to wait to kick that off, but I don't know if I can wait. I really want to hear more about Moment Feed.
And Alice, with all that you're doing, a kudos to you on how you're interacting with the things you've done. We've talked about that in previous podcasts. Alan, any questions you have right now before we get into what Moment Feed is about?
No, not at all. Nick, just haven't talked to you in a couple of years. And congrats on all the success, and I'm excited to hear what's new.
All right, let's talk about Moment Feed. What is the name Moment Feed? Everyone wants to know where that comes from. Talk about it.
Yeah, I didn't come up with the name, but someone else did, like the founder. I'm, again, sort of taking on a company that's relatively early stage.
Okay.
So I didn't found it. But yeah, Moment Feed, it's about the fact that on the spur of the moment, people want to get a feed of information when it comes to the internet. So it's sort of speaking a little bit to the fact that it's partly social media, partly information. I sort of have to explain what it is in order for you to sort of fully understand what Moment Feed is. But yeah,
What is the business model and what are you doing and what's the problem you're solving?
Yeah, so MomentFeed is all about the digital consumer that is mobile. So a consumer goes to their phone 96% of the time when they want something and they will put in a search. And unfortunately for most brands, they don't typically put in the brand name. So for instance, one of my customers is Starbucks. You would be shocked at the number of people who do not put Starbucks in to their search, even when they want to go to a Starbucks. They write coffee. And something like, I think it's something like 86% of the time when a consumer puts in a search on a mobile, it's for an unbranded search term, like a category, like pizza, coffee, mortgage, bank, all those kind of things. And so what my company does is basically enables a marketing team to, in a fairly automated way, impact every signal that Google, Apple, Amazon, all of these different companies that are serving up information look at in order to determine who shows up when you do that kind of search. So if you take mortgage, for instance, if you put mortgage into a Google search or you do it on Apple or wherever, you just write, I want a mortgage. What it will do is the first couple of searches will be paid for ads, probably by Quicken or the Rocket Companies or LearnMyBills, LendingTree, something like that. A couple of links down, you'll see a little map on your phone, and it will be a map of your local proximity, and it will have three and sometimes four different suggestions on that map. And those are local businesses that offer a mortgage or whatever it is that you're looking for. We make sure that our customers appear in those three almost all of the time. And doing so is a pretty complex exercise where you're managing a company's local presence across a lot of digital channels and their social media strategy and all kinds of things. But my software is one single platform that optimizes all of those signals so that people show up. And the consequence of that is the businesses that use our platform, they're the ones that get picked, because most people skip past the ad and they go to the map and they're like, yeah, I do want to talk to my local loan officer at whichever bank it may be. And they click on the little phone icon and they're speaking to the mortgage company straight away. And that mortgage company hasn't paid anything to Google for being there. They've just been using my software to do it.
Interesting. Somewhere on your website is one of the first things where it'll bring it up and you do the geocoding and things like that. How much proximity devices? We got a question. Is proximity devices?
Proximity is incredibly important. Actually, what we talk about when we talk about MomentFeed is that it's proximity search optimization. And this is one of the things that's really interesting about the digital native experience that is starting to become prevalent. Local matters. And it doesn't just matter about writing local on your website, but it matters that you have a local network. It used to be, and it still is to some extent, that you could operate in a completely phone-only kind of consumer-direct manner. However, the new way of people finding things spins the balance a little bit back to branch networks again, because if you have physical locations within some decent proximity to a consumer, Google now and Apple and other people will now feature you in the search results because they care about getting people out of their homes and buying things. And if you think about it, it makes a lot of sense for Google and Apple and so on. If they don't do that in other categories, Amazon is going to be the only company left on the planet and all local businesses will disappear, right? So it's in their interest to keep commerce flowing through local channels. So it's actually a huge advantage that branch network banks, mortgage banks have, because if you're a consumer direct business, you're typically in one or two locations and you don't have that network advantage where you're going to show up in a proximity search on what they call the Google 3-pack or on Apple Maps or Waze or anything like that.
Interesting. This is such a fascinating topic. So your company found the niche. It sounds like they went out and you're following a similar path to what you did when you went into Lead 360. And then is MomentFeed a rebrand of a previous company or was that the name of the company?
No, that was the name of the company. Yeah, it was when I joined, it was quite a lot bigger than Lead 360 when I joined, probably like seven times larger, but nowhere near as big as Velocify became. So yeah, they're already being successful. I'm just hoping to take it to the next level.
Well, what you're really doing is you're hitting right where the opportunity is, and that is, how can I compete with the big guys? I mean, Quicken is everywhere. Dave, we cannot get any ad searches. We want to be consumer direct, and Quicken is all over it here. They're the number one lender, and they don't even have a presence. So you're really hitting on something that I think should build hope for people. And
for sure, it levels the playing field. And I'm not to thank for it, Google and Apple and so on are, but we're sort of capitalizing on this opportunity. Yeah, I mean, if you're going up against the big guys in Consumer Direct, you're really going to have to buy leads at the end of the day, because your ability to accurately be able to figure out how to buy ads at a price that makes sense on Google is just not going to happen against the really big guys. But now, the way that the world is changing, if you have a branch network, this is absolutely what you should be doing. You should be making sure that you show up in the 3-pack and on Apple Maps and in other places too.
So this is so encouraging. I can't wait to share this out with so many people. We're going to be sending this podcast out. So talk specifically about when someone signs up with your company, walk us through the journey a little bit, and how quickly does it take to get the kind of results where they're showing up on the first page right before the page?
Yeah, so it's obviously, it's not overnight. It does take a few months. So when someone signs up with Moment Feed, we move into a kind of onboarding phase like every software company does. And essentially what we're doing is we're taking all of the local information that someone has about their company. So for each location, what facilities does it have? What's it, telephone numbers, address, geolocation? We work on all of that kind of thing. Once we have all the correct information and it's optimized for a keyword strategy that we've defined with a client, we then push all of that information out, not just to Google, but hundreds of other websites, so that all of the information everywhere on the internet is the same about each location. And then we enact a local social strategy. So you end up with a Facebook page and a social presence for every single location. It's no good just to have like one big Facebook page for your entire business. You have to have individual Facebook pages that have postings on them for every location. And then we also work on the online reputation piece as well. So is this company getting reviews on Google, on places like Yelp and other more relevant ratings websites? How do we respond to those reviews? How do we get more of those reviews? So our software automates a lot of that, but we go into probably a 3 to 6 week process of getting everything right. It all starts to broadcast out. And then we normally see within, depending how well set up the company was before they started with us, we typically see within about 3 months, the company starts to see really good results and they start to appear in the 3-pack. One of the really interesting things about the banking industry in general is it's many, many years behind in terms of doing these things than, say, the restaurant industry or general retail. So there's actually a gigantic opportunity right now, because even some of the big brands not doing a good job of doing the things that are necessary to appear in the 4-pack. So yeah, it's pretty much open blue ocean opportunity right now.
Oh, fascinating. The questions are coming in. Listeners, we can't possibly get all your questions. I'm just going to tell people to go out to your website and get to know you and meet you. How can people reach you?
Yeah. So obviously on the website, it directs folks to a form you can fill out and one of my salespeople will call you. You can also just reach me directly at Nick. So N-I-C-K at momentfeed.com, and I'll direct you into the right place.
Then I want to give a shout out also to Wendy Barber, who reached out to me, and she's with the BPR Group Communications. So Wendy, thank you so much for doing a great job of setting this up. Really good. Fascinating. I'm going to be getting this information and sending it on to a number of our clients. This is really valuable. Another piece of important information of how the smaller guy can compete with the bigger guy. That's where we're always wanting to help our clients and our listeners prosper. And you've been a great Christmas gift to our audience and with some great information. Thank you so much. And would you keep us posted on where you're at, some of the developments, as we're going to be launching another podcast in the new year, and it's called Innovation Mortgage Lending. I'd like to have you on that. I'd like to talk more in the future. So please keep us posted. And if there's anything that's developments, go, oh, this needs to get out. Well, we've got nearly 100,000 regular listeners, so bring it on. We'd love to have you on.
Yeah, I've really enjoyed it.
Folks, we've had as our special guest, Nick Hedges. He's CEO of Moment Feed. Be sure to check it out. Get a hold of Nick and this company. And I know we went way over, but folks, wasn't it worth it? I thought it was fascinating. I could go on and on this topic. It's one of my favorite topics. Anyways, next week, we're going to have Jessica Peterson on. She's a friend, and she's talking about things you can do to set your goals, meet your goals in the new year. Jessica has been a guest in the past. You'll enjoy her podcast. Also, a special thank you to our sponsors, Finastra, as well as the CMLA, or the Community Mortgage Lenders of America Group, as well as Indicom, Accelerate, Mobility, RE, Modex, and all the others. Check them, all of our advertisers out on our website, looking on LYKKEN on lending.com. Appreciate you all being here. It's been a great interview. So much fun. Have a great week, everyone. Merry Christmas. And be sure to come back next week. And then we'll wish you Happy New Year. Thank you for being here and sharing this podcast with others.
You've been listening to Lickin' on Lending, a weekly mortgage market update with your host, David Lickin of Transformational Mortgage Solutions. Join us next week, and thanks for listening.